The international image of Somalia has been tainted over decades by civil war, terrorism, and a series of humanitarian crises. But that's not the whole story of this Horn of Africa country, according to Michael Keating, the outgoing special representative of the UN Secretary General. He spent over 2 years there, based in the capital Mogadishu, and he says he's been impressed by the commitment of Somalis to get their country back on track.
The most powerful experience is of working with Somalis as they try and figure out how to reconstruct their country. And I have yet to meet a Somali of any age, male or female, who isn't a politician and who doesn't personally have the solution to Somalia's problems. The problem is, though, that, you know, the views of Somalis don't necessarily accord with each other.
I'm Daniel Dickinson, and for this UN and Africa podcast from UN News, I sat down with Mr. Keating in our main studio here in New York a few days after he briefed the Security Council for the last time. I began by asking him how he thinks the country can move forward.
It's a country that is emerging from 30 years of conflict and violence and making measurable progress in a number of areas, but still vulnerable to many risks. Progress it's making are in things like the economy, by some but certainly not all measures, security. It remains very vulnerable to drought and climatic episodes. But it's in a part of the world which has seen in the last 3 to 6 months a very encouraging uptick in international relations, which I hope is going to be good for the country and create an environment in which it can try and sort out some of the many problems it continues to face.
I think it would be fair to say that the image in the international media is of a country which is on the brink of a political crisis, another civil conflict. Is that fair?
Well, it's hard to get away from that image. One of the reasons it's hard to get away from it is that international journalists rarely go to Somalia, and they can only usually get the money and the insurance to do so when their institutions can afford to send them, and that tends to be when there's a big story, and the story tends to be of violence or of hunger, and that kind of reinforces the negative image of Somalia. But in fact, there's quite a lot of positive stuff going on. I'm based in Mogadishu. Even in the 2 years, 9 months that I've been there, it is clearly a much more vibrant city. People out in the streets at night, a lot more construction, much tidier city. There's a lot more economic activity. It is true that there do continue to be terrible security incidents, targeted assassinations, IEDs, terrible bomb October the 14th last year. Worst IED ever, ever, anywhere, killed 512 people. But by other metrics, security has improved in terms of people's ability to move around. Not everywhere, alas, but in many parts of the country.
Are things getting better for the people living in Mogadishu, because there have been some recent attacks? It's a daily threat, isn't it?
The thing is, if you compare Mogadishu today to 5 years ago or 10 years ago, there's no question that things are better. But if you compare it to 3 months ago or 6 months ago, there's a lively debate as to whether, you know, things are getting better or worse. And a lot of speculation as to whether Al-Shabaab, for example, whether
the terrorist group.
The terrorist group, extremists, they're affiliated with Al-Qaeda, you know, whether they are gaining in strength or whether they're being degraded. The thing is, though, about Somalia is that many of the problems it faces cannot just be attributed to extremists. You know, after 30 years of war, there are many grievances, many people feel a sense of injustice that their community or their clan has been subject to some terrible abuse. There are disputes over resources, revenues, borders, and these are exploited by extremists. So, but, you know, politically, things have definitely improved. I mean, there was an electoral process culminated in February 2017, peaceful transfer of power that was viewed as legitimate by the Somalis and by the international community. You know, there's a the federal map of Somalia is in place. You now have federal member states. You know, and things have really moved on, actually, in a very positive way in the last few years.
But having said that, most levels of government still struggle to perform the basic duties that one would expect of a government.
That is true. I mean, capacities are weak. There aren't enough skilled individuals. But again, there are more people from the Somali diaspora coming back. They have their second passports, which gives them a degree of security, but that's great. They come back, they're filling technical positions in government. I think one of the biggest challenges is lack of money. You know, the present government has had the nous, as it were, to recognize that unless, like you as an individual or like a business, you need to have your own money and your own resources if you're going to be truly sovereign. So I think one of the most impressive things that's happened over the last year has been an increase in tax base, customs base. There's something called an IMF staff monitor program, which has a bunch of benchmarks for financial reform. And slowly, you know, the capacity of the government to attract, manage and disperse money is going up. And that's not very exciting. It's not a headline news story, but it's actually incredibly significant in terms of the functionality of the state and the ability to do things like pay soldiers and policemen on time. Because if you don't do that, then you're encouraging corruption, you're lending credibility to extremists who claim that the state is, you know, non-functional and, you know, you can bribe people and so on. So that's you're right, capacity is low, but it's definitely improving from a low base.
Are you able to get out and about in Mogadishu and meet average Somali people?
I don't know what an average Somali person is, but I do. I'm lucky. I have close protection, and that enables me to get around a lot. I mean, I'm in town sometimes 5 times a week, or I travel to one of the parts of the country. The UN has offices, big offices in 5 or 6 locations, and smaller offices elsewhere. So I get to meet a lot of people. I try to go to cattle markets, and I've been to the fish market and so on, but there's only so much you can do if you're surrounded by, you know, close protection and armed guards and all the rest of it. I try and meet returnees from refugee camps, internally displaced people. One of the last things I did was visit a school for the blind. So I'm lucky. Not all my colleagues can do that. Some of the ones on the program side, and particularly humanitarians, do get out and about. But a lot of colleagues, it is true, do live in a bunkerized environment. And that's tough for them, because I think they're doing incredible work in difficult circumstances. But not being able to spend time with ordinary Somalis, meet their families, you know, go boating or whatever normal people do, you know, is really difficult. Because I think one of the great things of the UN is integrating, you know, is meeting local people.
What have those people that you've met at the cattle market been telling you?
Well, they tend to be focused on the price of camels and goats, and, you know, whether there's an import ban. Which they export. And I love talking to actually small business people, because they bring home the issues in a very vivid way. And if I can give you an example, you know, Somalia is one of the biggest exporters of animals on the hoof, particularly goats and camels. But of course, what it should be doing is exporting meat. In order to export meat, you've got to have the facilities to chop up the meat and then to refrigerate the meat and to package the meat up to a standard that is acceptable to the markets to which you're sending it. And so, you know, while we can celebrate Somalia being an exporter of animals on the hoof, all it does to me is make me frustrated that we haven't got greater investment and stability so that value can be added to Somalia's natural wealth. By the way, that extends beyond livestock. It includes fish, second biggest tuna fish stocks in the world, incredible clean energy, solar, wind, hydro, big rivers, the Juba and the Shabelle, with tremendous agricultural potential, an extraordinary diaspora, over 1 million Somalis in North America, Europe, South Africa, Kenya, Middle East, Australia, Far East, you know, a natural business network, major, you know, money transfer mechanisms, you know, so it's got a lot going for it. But the political instability and the difficulties in resolving, you know, disputes and grievances is impeding progress in the country.
Somalia is a great trading nation, isn't it? So there are reasons to be optimistic for the future.
Listen, Somalis can trade absolutely anything. I mean, I defy you to go to Somalia and try and buy something, you know, that they can't find. I mean, they trade absolutely everything. So very entrepreneurial people indeed. And I think that's, you know, what's helped Somalia survive so many years of, you know, adversity.
Why should people across the world care about Somalia?
I can give you the noble reasons why they should, which is that Somali women in particular are among the most disadvantaged people on the planet. It's one of the worst places to have a child. Somali children don't really have many choices in life. But I suppose, you know, the other reason is that instability in Somalia is not good news either for Somalia's neighbors or for people in more distant parts of the world, whether it's Europe, North America, the Far East or elsewhere. I mean, Somalia should once again be an exporter of stability. People forget that in the 70s and 80s, you know, Somalis were mediating other people's conflicts. They were seen as one of the more advanced countries in Africa. And now Somalia is seen as an exporter of instability. And I don't think it is good for Somalia to be that. So I think, you know, stability in Somalia will be good for stability both in the neighborhood, the broader horn, but also in terms of preventing, you know, the spread of extremism in other parts of the world.
How difficult is it to work in a country when it's so difficult to get beyond Mogadishu, not just for you, but as you mentioned before, for your staff?
The UN in Somalia, we recognize that there are many, many other actors out there, both Somali government and non-governmental. There's business actors. There's also many international actors, some of them Western, some of them from Africa, from the Middle East. And the thing is to agree objectives and then work with partners to see those objectives realized. So the fact that we are not able to rush around and meet everybody doesn't necessarily mean that you can't play an extraordinarily constructive role. So, for example, you know, we've been working on trying to maintain the peace in one of Somalia's bigger cities, Galkayo. And it's quite difficult for us to go there and hang out there, although I have done that and some of my colleagues have done that. But we have very strong relations with the local youth groups, the women's associations, the business leaders, the local politicians. We're in touch with them all the time. We provide them support. We provide them training. You can still do an awful lot without necessarily being able to be in the community full time. I mean, it's partnerships that matter, trust, convening power, and policy skills.
You mentioned Al-Shabaab, the terrorist group. The organization is now somewhat active in the south of the country, and there are reports that the U.S. has launched drone airstrikes against those groups operating there.
Yeah, I mean, Al-Shabaab has actually been pushed back over the last 4 or 5 years. Its physical presence and control of major urban areas is more or less gone. That's largely thanks to AMISOM, the African Union troops, 22,000 troops from 5 countries, both police and soldiers. But they are very adaptive and they continue to have a presence, unfortunately, in cities, but that tends to be by extracting rents and raising money. But they're still capable of targeted assassinations, IEDs, and even the occasional suicide attack, although they're becoming rarer. The Americans are present, as are many other countries, by the way, but the Americans are present training special forces on the Somali side, mentoring them and so on. They are doing some drone strikes. Compared to other, you know, Afghanistan or elsewhere, they're still fairly modest in number, but they are still pretty high profile. In discussing ways in which to degrade Al-Shabaab, one of the conversations I have with American colleagues and indeed with Turkish and European and British and all the other countries that have an active security presence there is that Al-Shabaab will not be degraded purely through military and counterterrorism means. It requires a political strategy. You know, young people are attracted to Al-Shabaab, not because they're ideologically passionate, but because they need a job and they need a purpose in life, and often they don't have many options. And Al-Shabaab is also exploitative and abusive in many ways. I mean, it will force people to work for them. So you need a multi-pronged strategy which involves increasing the legitimacy of government in terms of dispensing justice, in terms of security forces that are functional and capable, in terms of delivering services, as well as a military and CT strategy. So you need both if you're going to succeed in denting the appeal of Al-Shabaab and removing their support base.
And presumably a lot more money and more political will from the international community.
Money is important. Money is not the only thing, but money is important in terms of developing capable security forces, as well as a justice system, as well as an intelligence capacity. One of the things that has happened under my watch is there's been subscription by the Somalis and by the international community to something called the comprehensive approach to security, which has as its core the notion that security is not just a military thing. It is also about access to justice. It's also about basic accountability at the local level. I don't know where you live in New York, but if you go home and your house has been robbed and a wall blown down, there's somebody you need to go to. You're not going to call in an airstrike to deal with it. You need, you know, a policeman, and you need somebody to help you. And it's really important to look at security from the perspective of people, not just from the perspective of, you know, as it were, security professionals, and adopt a comprehensive approach to it, looking at things like local accountability, governance, policing, justice, corrections, and so on. And I'm very pleased that the government of Somalia and its partners are pursuing this comprehensive approach, and I hope we'll fund it accordingly.
You're leaving Somalia after spending 2.5 years as the top UN official there. What are you going to miss about the country?
The Somalis, no question about it. I mean, I've enjoyed working with them. They've got a great sense of humour. They have a very particular way of playing their politics, which is intriguing and exasperating and entertaining in unequal measures. I will also, of course, miss my colleagues and so on, but clearly the most powerful experience is of working with Somalis as they try and figure out how to reconstruct their country. And I have yet to meet a Somali of any age, male or female, who isn't a politician and who doesn't personally have the solution to Somalia's problems. The problem is, though, that, you know, the views of Somalis don't necessarily accord with each other. The clan system adds an extraordinary dimension to all this. And the absence of institutions and due process and rule of law makes everything much more complicated. But it is a real privilege. Somalia is a place where the UN remains really important. That's not true everywhere in the world. We're right at the center of things. So as SRS chief, had a very privileged position working with Somalis to help them figure out what their own future should look like and how they can achieve it.
The outgoing special representative of the Secretary General for Somalia, Michael Keating, speaking to me, Daniel Dickinson, for this UN and Africa podcast from UN News. Thanks for listening. We'll have another edition for you soon.
Africa! I wake up in the morning. This is the